Why couldn't you fall asleep till 6 in the morning?
Well, I have to take sleep medicine. Sometimes it works like that, and sometimes it doesn't. So I started taking it about 11 o'clock and just didn't fall asleep at 6 o'clock this morning. That's why I was kind of reluctant to do this. That happens a lot. And when you leave, I'm going to have to go back to sleep or I'll fall asleep at 7 o'clock tonight. So anyway, my sleep patterns have never been normal.
Okay. This is Charlotte Cleary. It's July 3rd, 2016. I'm here at Greenport Manor with Patrick Caraceo, talking to him for the Hudson Area Archives. Patrick, do you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Patrick Caraceo, and I'm here at Greenport Manor talking to Charlotte Cleary about Hudson Archives. I mean, I'm here anyway, so I might as well do this. I'm not getting paid, though, so I'll do it anyway. We just start doing it.
I can ask a question.
Okay.
Tell me about your cats.
Oh. Well, as a matter of fact, when I was walking to feed the cats yesterday, that is when I decided to do this again. I wish I wasn't so tired. For the reasons I do feed them. I feed them because I love them. I've always had a tremendous love for animals, always. Unlike my uncle Charles, my mother's brother. He loved animals. He had like a sixth sense when it comes to animals. I mean, he had no fear of animals whatsoever. When I was a little kid, up on top of the hill, there was this family, and their last name was Sessions. And they had this white German Shepherd called Jiggs. And he was terrifying. My uncle could walk up to that dog, and he'd roll over on his back like a puppy and start whimpering. My uncle would scratch his back. Anyone else, he would tear apart. I had a lot of respect for my uncle. He didn't possess anything that that society would think it was important. But it was his way with animals. He had a razor sharp sense of humor. Matter of fact, when he was working with guys, they'd have to put him by himself because he'd make everybody laugh so hard they couldn't do anything. And he was a fantastic musician. I still have his trumpet. But life wasn't a lot of fun for him. It wasn't a lot of fun at all. And even back then, there was a difference between my sister and I. Because my mother, my brother, my uncle lived way out in the county, on West Taconic, on this road. I haven't been here so long, I know. I can't think of the road right now. It's off of Route 27 out to Conic. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, he lived out there. He lived in his trailer. And in the middle of winter, he ran out of something, food or something. So we got in the car, and we went up there. And my sister, why are you helping him? My sister, why are you helping him? My mother would tell her, because he's my brother, and I love him. And right then she couldn't understand why my brother was doing that. I mean, it really pissed her off. And I couldn't figure out why either, because I'm with my mother. I'm very, very emotional, and I'm not a mean person. My sister, like, takes after my father's side of the family. I take after my mother's side of the family. Now, where I got my left handle, I must have got it from here. Otherwise, who knows where you get your traits from? I mean, I love all kind of animals, and there are people here who make comment about why I feed the cats. They don't do it around me, but I knew they were doing it anyway. And somebody told me how they've heard all kind of negative things from people why I do this, and I don't know why it. I mean, it doesn't concern. Okay, it doesn't concern them. I don't ask them for any money. I do it because it makes me feel good. I mean, God created them too. I got turned off at church a long time ago. When I was a little kid, I got turned off. First of all, I was forced to go to church. I hated going. I don't know what was going on there, because I didn't want to be in the first place, so I didn't pay attention to it. And back then, the priest, they spoke in Latin, and we had these, I don't know what they were. They were like chaperones, these women volunteers who would, they were like prison guards, I guess, because they would walk up and down the pews and make sure you're behaving yourself. And I can't stand it. I believe in God. That part just didn't interest me. I mean, I never heard the priest talk about anything but money. And to this day, I think a lot of people think that if you just go to church on Sunday, everything is okay. They go to church and they think, oh, gee. They go to church Sunday morning, and all week they think they can do whatever they want. And just because they go to church that one Sunday morning, everything is absolved. I don't think it works that way. Just showing up to me doesn't matter. You have to do something to prove. You have to prove your spirituality. You just can't go there and just sit. And if you're not listening to anything that's being told, then you're just wasting your time. Well, back then, anyway, people, you know, they would be drunk and fighting and everything, whatever, the night before, and they'd be at church the next day thinking everything's fine. I went to church, did my time, you know. I don't believe you have to be at a certain place at a certain time and do certain things to receive your blessing, I guess, from God or whatever. I've never been very conventional when it comes to anything like that. My beliefs are more Native American and Eastern philosophy, which Native American and Eastern philosophy are a lot alike. Like the temple used to go to sometimes up in Grafton, they have a peace pagoda up there. It's only the second one in the United States. It's a really neat temple. It's really cool. And the land that it's on was given to the Buddhists by this Native American person. I had a paper on it about that place, but I have no idea where it is now. And if I left, I don't know if I could find it or not. Yeah, I mean, I'm going back Oh. I remember a friend of mine, the Sunday after 9/11 went there, there was a prayer vigil there. Every year, once a year, the Sunday closest to Gandhi's birthday, they have this prayer vigil. And all these people from different religions, they get together and they do this meditation. And we did it. We went there right after 9/11, and there was all kind of people were there. I mean, every kind of religion you can think of were there. And we had to go inside because it was raining. And we had this prayer session. I don't know if you know who these people are. One of the people there was this man, Dennis Banks. At the time, he was head of AIM, American Indian Movement. The actor from Last of the Mohegans, Russell Means, he was there. And Dennis Banks, Ruby Ridge. He was at the, in 1972, there was the fight on the Indian Reservation in, I don't know, south of North Dakota, where the two FBI agents got killed. Dennis Banks was there. Pelletier's name. Anyway, he was the Indian that was blamed for the murders, and he's still in, I think he's in some federal prison. I don't know if he's in San Quentin, or he's in some federal prison somewhere. And what's his name? This man, Dennis Banks, he was there. He was there when that happened. And this Buddhist sect and this Native American belief, they are one and the same. Their beliefs are very, very close together. And I've never been traditional when it comes to beliefs or my feelings about much of anything. I'm glad I was born in this country. I'm glad I was here. I'm glad I was born here. I'm glad I'm here. But I'm trying to think where to go with this. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things I think that Americans stick their head in the sand when it comes to thinking about what happened. say what happened in World War II with the Holocaust. I mean, that was horrible. That was fantastically horrible. And what happened to African Americans when they were brought over here from Africa in slavery. But most people don't even think about what happened to the people who were already here. What happened to them was just as bad. The United States government did to them the same things that Hitler did to the Jews or anybody else over the concentration camp. They did the exact same things. And people don't pay any attention to that. Native Americans, they get kicked around more than anybody else because nobody talks about it. And if I went down Warren Street talking to who's like this, I don't think I'd make it a block before somebody shot me. I mean, they had their whole country taken from them. You know, they didn't just sit there and go, "Oh, Europeans are here now, so we have to leave now." You know, so we didn't cause any trouble. I just can't look and saying this country was founded on democracy and freedom, because it wasn't. It was founded on murder. Manifest destiny. It's like, well, just because I have the power, to take things from you, I have the right to do it. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. That's dictatorship. I don't care. That's the same thing Hitler did, same thing Stalin did. It's the same thing Genghis Khan did. And me and my close friends, that's what we feel about things. I may be 68, but I'm still a hippie. And most of my philosophies of then are pretty much the same now. See, I don't believe in having to be a certain place at a certain time and doing certain things. That doesn't really mean anything to me. As far as I'm in church all the time. Because God created all of this. God created everything. God created all of this. I'm in a spiritual, physically, I'm in a spiritual place everywhere. Especially when I look out, when I see nature, I see God. I was going to say something, I forgot. Oh, what the hell? That happens a lot. Where was I going to go with that? God, I hate that when that happens. I can't think. I can't. That just. I was thinking about it and just slipped out. It happens quite a bit. And there are a lot of people who believe like I do. But most people who live in what I can say Western civilization and philosophies are completely different. I don't know why. I don't know how I got this way, but there's nobody else in my family. I'm like no one else in my family. Like no one. My beliefs are mine, and nobody. I didn't learn this from. This wasn't passed down to me. But I've always been different when it comes to that. When it comes to things like that. I had something I was going to say, but I can't remember what it was. Like, I had this shirt, and it has these Native Americans on here with rifles, and it says, the original Homeland Security, and the date was 1492 or something like that. I have the shirt somewhere, and, I mean, no people, no society that deliberately hands another, no society that hand, that gives people contaminated garments. They're not a benevolent, that's not a benevolent society. That's a malevolent society. If you purposely are going to give something to somebody that you know is going to hurt them or kill them, give them disease, that's not good. And that's exactly what... what the government at that time did to the Indians, and they thought it was perfectly fine. And the thing is, nobody talks about that. Nobody, the people in power, they don't do anything. They don't talk about that somehow to put that to rest, to make it okay, but. Like it was done with the Holocaust. People talk about that all the time, how bad it was, and how people react to it, how they keep it going to make people understand how bad it was so it won't happen again. Well, it comes to Native Americans, most people don't even give a damn. And I don't agree. I disagree completely with that.
What about Eastern or Native American philosophy?
Well, there. I can't get specific. I mean, I have books on Buddhism, on Hinduism, on I have Native American philosophies, but I also have attention deficit disorder too. So I read them, and the only thing I can say for sure is they all say the same thing. It's just the words are different, and the paragraphs are set different. But they're all saying the exact same thing. When it talks about spirituality and what's good and what's not good. So I don't believe in religion. I mean, what's happening now? This is a holy war. I mean, this is exactly what it is. And it's all because of religion. You know, the way I believe is better than the way you believe, and if you don't believe the way I believe, I'm going to kill you. And I have a paper on ISIS. Somebody gave it to me, so I read about them and see what. It's going to be impossible to beat these people, because they pass it on. Every male person in ISIS who was born, the teachings get passed down to them. So if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to kill it. You're going to have to go right down the line and kill all of them. Or else it's not going to stop. Their philosophy is anyone who disagrees with them at all, they say this, the Allah they believe in prophesies this, to, I don't know, I forget how many thousand years ago it was, that anybody doesn't believe in nation, it's a doctrine okaying murder. That's pretty much what it is. I don't know specifics, like when it comes to, like Buddhism, when it comes to mindfulness. That's not really a specific thing. It's more of a concept than an exact tool. Any of the beliefs are like that. They're not exact. They're not exact. Written in stone this way. It's more or less just what you believe.
Can you tell me about a spiritual experience you've had?
Oh yeah. That night, yeah, when I quit drinking. That night. I've had several. But that night, I couldn't believe it. When I was walking home, I felt like I was floating about three feet off the ground. All the way home, I was saying, thank you, God. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Because I didn't have a clue that was going to happen. I had no idea that was going to happen. I mean, all those things that I said. I remember getting kicked out of the bar because I was just being a real pain in the neck. And I went down to Frankie's. I remember leaning against, I think it was a cigarette machine, thinking about, why do I do this? And all of a sudden, I had a real and true actual light bulb moment because I settled a click. And the AA Big Book appeared. And this voice said, the only time you do this is when you're drunk, and that's when it hit me. See, everybody's alcoholism has to they have to realize what it is to them. It's just what I was talking about. It isn't cut in stone what alcoholism is to you. It's more of a thought process or a feeling process. And when I saw that, and then I realized, that's what alcoholic is to me. That's what I do when I get drunk. Because all the negativity I had, all the toxic waste I had, it would start spewing out when I was drunk, and I had no control over it because I just wanted to tell somebody about what was going on. And that's what would happen. But then later, I went over to North River Bar, and the real big one, the real big spiritual awakening happened, where the voice talked to me. I can remember like it was yesterday. I remember I was looking at this real sexy biker girl, and then I noticed, and she was looking at me, and then I noticed her boyfriend looking at me, looking at her. He was a big guy. I'm thinking to myself, I gotta cut this out, man. This isn't safe. And then some other things happened, and this voice, whatever you want, or whatever you've been looking for, I don't remember the exact words, you will find in AA. And I went, I had a half a bottle of Coors Light, I went and sat in the bar, turned around, walked out, and that was it. I remember getting 7th Street Park and turning around, and something else said to me, this part of your life is over. And it was. That was it. I stopped hanging out in bars. Like I said, my first AA meeting back was a Friday night, February 9th. And I met my friend Marina, and we went down to a meeting in, down by Kerhunkson on Route 209 out of Kingston. I can't remember the exact place. I could find out. It's a little bitty library up on top of the hill. Not Cold Spring. I always forget this place. Anyway, and then that was a Friday night. And then the Monday after was February 12th. I always think of the night Tyson lost the fight in Japan, because that was a Sunday, February 11th. And the next day is when I walked into Nagoya, which Goya stands for get off your ass. That's what the AA name is. And I walked in there, and I remember feeling for the first time in my life, the first time I felt I belonged anywhere. And that's how most of the people felt that were sitting around that table. And that was when that journey took place, and it was a good one. It was a real good one. And I don't know.
What connects you to the other people in AA except addiction?
Excuse me?
What do you think connects you to the people you met in AA except for addiction?
I don't know what you would call it. It's nothing concrete. It's what connects me. I'm not connected with everybody in AA. We had a certain bunch, like a group of us would hang out. A certain philosophy, a certain belief. A group of core of us, about 20 of us, who liked doing the same things. We thought quite a bit aloud, and at the time, we both really wanted to get sober and stay sober. And See, AA is based on spiritual. It says in how it works, we grow along spiritual lines. It talks about prayer and meditation. and AA is what a lot of religions do. You find out who you are, and you change from who you were. You change from the person you were to the person who you are. And that's basically what you do. You're looking. They say it's like peeling the onion. You're looking to get all the negative traits you just try to learn how to be the best person you can. And not by faking it. They say fake it till you make it, but you end up trying to be the best person you can, trying to improve your contact with God, as our higher power, as we call it. Has nothing to do with church. Church is upstairs. AA is in the basement. They say upstairs save your soul, and AA save your ass. Even though the Supreme Court has deemed Alcoholics Anonymous a religious group, they don't know what they're talking about, because they think anything has to do with God is religion, and it's not. Religion and spirituality are two different things completely. They can be the same, but most time they're not. Just because somebody believes in a certain religion doesn't mean they have any spiritual beliefs whatsoever. And you go to church, I'm going to church, and I'm sitting here in church, and I think the majority of people don't really have any clue as why they're even there. Because I've seen people come out, go to church, and they act all pious and everything, and then they're back to the same people an hour later. It's hard to put this. It's hard to put all this into words. Like when people say we're protecting our way of life and our freedoms. Well, I think freedom means different things to different people. Have you ever read the book Animal Farm? That's a lot of Americans believe parallels that. Everybody should be free. Everybody should have the same rights, except them, or except them, except that kind of person. They shouldn't have the same rights as I do. They shouldn't have the same freedoms as I do. There's supposed to be some kind of separation of church and state, which is a farce, because that just doesn't happen. I don't know if it ever happened. It sure as hell isn't happening now. I mean, I believe you either live by the Constitution or live by the Bible. You can't do both, because they both are positive. They both say different things. I cannot stand. I don't care what a person believes, but I cannot stand it when they try to force their belief on me. I'm not going to happen. Not going to happen at all. like what's happening in what's happening in politics today. Oh God, it just scares the hell out of me. And this Tea Party really scares me. They really do. As far as I'm concerned, nothing but a bunch of damn closet Nazis. There's nothing democratic about those people at all. It's all dictatorship. We want you to live like this, and that's it. I have a friend of mine who who doesn't believe in abortion. So I asked him, I said, who's going to take care of those children? You know, I asked him, I said, would you want someone to bring two or three of those kids to your house to take care of? Oh, no, I wouldn't want them. Well, then who's going to take care of them? Who's going to take care of all these, who's going to take care of all these young born children? He would say to me, well, they shouldn't have done that in the first place. I said, yeah, well, people shouldn't do a lot of things in the first place. But the fact of the matter, if these children are born, who's going to take care of them? And that's the reason I'm for a woman's right to choose. I don't think they believe and they know what's going to happen. If a child is born and nobody wants him, he's going to end up being a ward of the state. He's end up going to be, the system is going to end up taking care of him. And he's behind the eight ball before anything even starts then. He's going to end up, it's not going to end up good for him in the first place. And it is for a woman's right to choose. No one should tell. No one should be forced to do something they don't believe they should do. Simple as that. That's what democracy is supposed to be. I mean, you tell somebody you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. That's dictatorship. Now, when it comes to that, in any profession, you have to take tests. You have to have professional certification. You have to have professionals watching you to make sure you're going to be able to do the task that you want to do. Everything except for parenting, which is the most important job in the world, and anybody is allowed to do it. And a lot of people should not have children. If you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of kids? It's just, this is going to work. You just can't. So I walk, and I see a lot of things that people in cars, when people are driving, they can turn their heads and go, I didn't see that thing, just keep on going. When you're walking, you see things that are going on, because you're right there with them. And I've seen people treat kids like they're nothing but bags of garbage. I've seen it. I've seen people. This is one guy I knew all my life. He has very, very bad mental and emotional problems. Not his fault, but that's the way he is. And he's also had child molestation charges against him. And this was about 25, yeah, I forget what time it is. This is late 80s. And I saw him and this woman and this baby. And I knew they shouldn't have had this child. They just shouldn't have had it. And I told somebody who was in the mental health system. They said, well, there's nothing we can do. We can't. So what do you mean you can't do anything about it? This guy is a convicted pedophile. I said, he's in the mental health system. He's very emotionally messed up. I said, what? And they couldn't do anything about it. They could, and that that child was beat before he even started. He has no chance. He has no chance of anything good happening to him. Like, I knew just one girl, and she had a child. And she was in a mental health system. She was very mentally deficient, very confused. She wasn't very, I don't know how to say that. She had some very strong emotional problems. And she became pregnant and had this child, and she had no idea how to take care of him. I mean, she had no idea how to take care of baby Morris. She didn't have to take care of a doll. And believe me, if I know how to take care of a baby more than the person who has it, they shouldn't have it. I mean, She just had no common sense. She just did not know how to take care of her baby. She just didn't know how. When babies are young, they can't hold their heads up. They just don't have the strength. So one day we're at a meeting and she's standing there, and her baby's, it's only like 2 or 3 months old, and the baby's sitting there with his head all tilted. And she didn't know enough to even pay any attention to it. So I told a woman friend of mine who I knew real good, was a real nice lady, and who knew how to get her point across a lot better than I did. She went up to the store and she goes, "Oh, look at your baby." And she,
just careful. Yeah.
And she corrected what was going on with the child. She told her, "You know, you can't do this. Look at how you're doing. You got to keep his head like this." And she did it in a way where it wasn't offensive, where I couldn't have done it. The girl just had no clue. And I feel so bad for this. I felt so bad for that baby. Oh, because her and the guy she was with, I mean, they didn't wash. They had no, oh my God. They just had no clue on how to take care of themselves. They didn't wash, they didn't take care of their teeth, they were uneducated, you could smell her 2 or 3 feet away from her. I mean, one time she walked, her jacket she had on was so, it smelled like urine so much. Somebody told her, you gotta go home. You can't wear that here. And she had no concept of what was right and what was wrong, what's okay, what wasn't. And he allowed her to have a baby, which is, I just shake my head. I can't believe some of the things that are allowed and some of the things that are considered not okay. I don't know what else about now. One thing, I went through different changes. The first change was, I went in the Army. I was 20 in May of 1968, and that's where a major change in my philosophy took place. See, I didn't have any teenage years, so that's in my early 20s. I did the things I did because I considered them my teenage years. My father, he was just He was very dictatorial, very dictatorial. He wouldn't let me be who I am. I wasn't allowed to find out who I was. I wasn't allowed to do things and make mistakes. I wasn't allowed to make any decisions on my own. He treated me like I was a robot. In order to survive, I had to become like a non-entity. Because everything I did was wrong. So if everything you do is wrong, in order to survive, you don't do anything. So that's what I ended up doing. It was the only way I had to survive. I decided that. I remember one time, I was in third grade, I think, and I decided that. I said, if I'm going to survive this, I have to... It was the only survival technique I had, was to become as non-existent as possible. That's what I had to do. He had just no understanding of children. I ran away when I was 5 once. I mean, it was only up the top of the hill, but you're talking a couple hundred yards up on top of the hill to this woman's house. Her name was Mrs. Muller. I don't know if she's still alive now. I have seen her in the last. Oh hell. I knew her sons. Her sons were good friends of mine. And I don't know if she's still alive now, but 20 years ago she was, and she remembers that. I went up and knocked on her door, and I walked in. I said, "Can I live here?" And I was 5. What did I know? I figured I don't like it here. I'll just go up here and live. I ran away because I was so terrified of being, I was terrified of my father. That was pretty much like that. He was a pretty terrifying guy. There's no way I'm going to be able to say everything I want to say in this time. It's just not going to take place. It just can't happen. There are things I would like to talk about. It would take a lot of time to do that. Talk about what transpired, what events transpired to get to the person who I am now. A lot of it's just there just wouldn't be enough time on this little interview here. Excuse me. I'm trying to think how to say this. There were 3 major changes. When I went in the Army, I came out of the Army a different person. I guess God leads you to the people you're supposed to be with. See, when I was a teenager, I wasn't allowed to be the person I wanted to be. In a lot of ways, I got out of the Army in January 28, 1970. In a lot of ways, I feel like that's when I was born, because I did things different than I did before I went in. I started letting my hair grow long, which I wanted to do before, but I wasn't allowed. Now I was in the Army already, so I'm old enough to do what I want, look what I want. And I was led to people who were like-minded like me. We used to hang around 7th Street Park. That's where all the Hudson hippies hung out. It was good. I liked it. I really liked it. I really did. It was, see, when people talk about the 60s, the 60s also went into the middle 70s. How do you call it? The philosophy or the way people looked or acted, it went into the mid 70s too. And there was a whole society of people like us, I don't know, hippies, maybe, and to me, it was amazing to sit and watch. All of a sudden, where did all these talented young people come from? I mean, my God, out of England, I can't even name the rock and roll bands that came out of England in the 60s and 70s. And then here too. But British, they hands down had the best bands in the world. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, you just take, yeah, the Beatles, had the Rolling Stones, you have Led Zeppelin, just those three right there are just fantastic. Then Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, Mick Taylor, and I can go on and on, Fleetwood Mac. I can't even, the volume of young talent that came out of that little country it's hard to even fathom. But that movement, I don't know how it even started. I don't know where it came from. But I liked it. I know I liked it. Now, everybody my age didn't, but I did. Like, and the people who were making all the money, the bands, like I said, the Rolling Stones, the Jefferson Airplane, the Dead, all these people who were in these bands making money, they were hippies just like us. They just happened to be making a lot of money. But the basic philosophy was the same. And that's what made it so interesting. They could look at Woodstock. The people on the stage doing the performing were the same as us. They just were performers. They just were making more money than a lot. They were performers. They were professionals. And I talked to a couple of them. I talked to people who knew them. And as a matter of fact, I met a woman, had a woman friend of mine who used to hang out with the Beatles, she hung out with the Rolling Stones. As a matter of fact, I used to buy her records. Her name was Genya Raven. And I used to follow her, I used to buy her records in the early 70s. She played with a band called 10 Wheel Drive. And she dated Jagger for about a year and a half. So she knew all these people. It was really interesting talking to her about what things are like. She has the last letter that Mama Cass ever wrote. She has it. And she has records. She has songs that Ronnie Spector made that had never been published. You know, Ronettes. What the hell is his name? Oh, God, what the heck is his first name? He's in prison now for killing that woman. She's like, well, that's crazy. I can't think of that. Hey, record producer. Oh, boy. He produced the Beatles, he produced Phil Spector. He told us about him. And it was a really interesting time, really was, to sit back and watch all this. See, if I was a writer, I could put it all down and what it was like, but I'm not. I mean, it would be really interesting to be able to put that down in a chronological order and be able to write it. I have the talent to do that. But it was something to see, it really was. I was glad I was born when I was. If I was born 10 years before that, I wouldn't have liked it. I mean, because the 50s were dull. 50s sucked. I couldn't stand it. The only music I liked, I didn't like any music, most of it until thank God for Ed Sullivan. Because it was Little Richard. Little Richard was the first music I heard that I loved. First music. Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Chuck Berry. I couldn't stand Elvis Presley. As far as I'm concerned, he's not the king of rock and roll. Do it rock and roll. I used to have to go to... My sister was 7 years older than me, so she wanted to go see the movies. So my mother made her take me. I had to sit and watch these stupid Elvis movies. And didn't like it at all. When I first saw Little Richard, I said, that's rock and roll. That's rock and roll right there. Actually, his real name is Richard Pennyman. And then when the early 60s came, it came to Beatles and Rolling Stones, The Grateful Dead, Bob Dylan, Jefferson Airplane. Now that started happening. That's when everything, that's when I really started liking that. I really did. Matter of fact, when I was in high school, I think it was my freshman year, I was voted homeroom representative to, I guess, the school had this, I don't know what you call it. We had homeroom representatives would go to the auditorium and had this, what you would call it. School representatives, I guess, for and I turned it down because what I wanted, they weren't going to, this is 1963, and I wanted the faculty to start letting us let our hair around, let us wear sandals, and I knew they weren't going to do it, so I said, look, they're not going to do what I wanted to, so they're not even going to listen to me. And they didn't. I mean, back then, girls had to wear skirts all the time, and it just, which in some ways was good. In some ways. I've just never been very conventional. When it comes to the way I believe in things, last night I watched this television program. It's about something I saw before about this woman in